relationships thrive through conversations. So conversations are dialogue. So that is how I ended up doubling down throughout my experience on how do we have better conversations, particularly better conversations about the things that often go unsaid.
Welcome to the Human Capital Lab podcast, where learning transforms work and lives. Hosted by Executive Director Rich Douglas, we explore how education and innovation create opportunities to drive impact in the field of talent development. Get ready. Today's episode starts now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Human Capital Lab podcast brought to you by Bellevue University. I'm Dr. Rich Douglas, your host and the executive director of the Human Capital Lab. In our podcast, we explore a variety of topics from a variety of people in the human capital management and talent development fields. And today we have a special guest, Nicola Brown. And the reason why she's special, because she's a member of our community. And we're always happy to bring people who are participating in other aspects of the lab onto the podcast to talk about the things that they're most interested in and bring them out and share them with you. So if you are watching this and you're interested in participating in the lab, please feel free to find us at humancapitallab.org. And we are not-for-profit, non-commercial. Everything we do costs you nothing to participate in. So we would encourage you to go ahead and take a look at that, and you can join fascinating people like Nicola, who you're going to find out in just a moment, is amazing. So, Nicola, welcome to the podcast. We're glad to have you. We'd like to have you share with the audience a little bit about, I know you're in private practice. If you would, just share a little bit about your background, your education, and tell us what you do before we start diving into some specific topics.
Absolutely. Thank you. So, hi, everyone. I'm Nicola. My work is focused on supporting people to make sense together through dialogue. And how did I get here might be the question wondering in your mind. And I started out studying ecology and how systems work. And with that understanding, I realized that every system is a relationship, and relationships thrive through conversations. So conversations are dialogue. So that is how I ended up doubling down throughout my experience on how do we have better conversations, particularly better conversations about the things that often go unsaid. So the elephant that's in the room in that negotiation, or as you're thinking about your team development strategy, the thing that you don't want to look at is usually the thing that becomes the stakeholder that drives why your change or your transition or transformation doesn't work. And that's what our practice focuses on. And that's how my career journey has led me here.
And tell us a little bit about your practice. Who needs your service, and why do they need you?
We work with organizations and systems that are in the midst of a change or a transition. And not just any change or transition, they're embarking on bringing something new into the world alongside that change. So their leaders are being stretched more than they're normally stretched. And we come alongside them to think about and design learning opportunities for them to build their human capabilities alongside whatever business venture they're looking to build and launch.
You know, people pay a lot of, well, this is, I guess, a pun. Sorry about this. But people pay a lot of lip service to comm skills, communication skills. But they really don't talk about dialogue a lot. And I know your philosophy is that most organizations treat dialogue like a nice to have skill. Tell us why it's vital.
So the thing that I will say is that connection happens on a continuum. It's not a binary state. And so if we don't have dialogue, and when we don't have dialogue, a connection then feels binary. It doesn't allow an individual to have the attention and the relationship to negotiate that change. So an example I'll give you is we are in a season that we're looking at leaders to be more adaptive. And so leaders are going through adaptive frameworks and tool sets, but then they need to apply it in the work environment for that to happen. To apply it means that I need to talk to you, Rich, about what adaptive means for me. And then you share what adaptive means for you. And together, we implement adaptive for the organization. If we don't have the skill set of dialogue, we lose each other at some point in that process. And that then becomes a friction.
You're describing a skill that really is about leadership. It's about an advanced form of leadership. You know, managers, they fix things. They keep things on track. They make sure things arrive on time, on budget, et cetera, et cetera. But it's leaders who actually who go into the unknown. And when you talk about, when you use the word adaptive, I immediately think, yeah, because these people are heading into, you know, VUCA, you know, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. That's where true leadership lies.
But
you can't go alone. In other words, the leader, you send the leader off to Harvard or whatever to go get some executive leadership skills. Okay, so I go and I hang out with my peers and I learn some stuff. And now my brain's all full of this stuff. And I got to go back to the office. I've got a team back there who didn't go to school with me. And if I'm hearing you correctly, I've got to be able to communicate where my head's at and where I'm going in a way that even if they're not as adaptive, they can kind of look over the fence and see what I'm talking about and have trust and faith that, you know what, we might be going somewhere. Tell us about that dynamic of connecting back with your team and through dialogue.
And you absolutely touched on a core tenet of that is trust. Leaders need to be trusted for their managers, from their managers, so that work can occur. And so what happens in dialogue is often I have this new insight, this new knowledge, and I want you to adopt it immediately without taking into consideration what other knowledge you have on your plate already. So if we think about it as you're going through a buffet line and you've decided that you want one thing from the buffet line and that's it. However, most individuals have multiple things from the buffet line. So the conversation and the dialogue piece comes in when you start to think about how do you integrate all of the knowledge from all of the pieces to then use that as insight to move forward instead of seeing it as, oh, we're changing again. You went to another training, you have a new idea, you use the example of going to Harvard, you and your friends got together again as professionals, and you think you know what we need as managers, and you're not actually hearing what the managers need. The core tenet for a leader is to be able to hear what their managers need and understand what skill gaps and capacity gaps are present to then communicate effectively through dialogue.
So let's get into the weeds a little bit because—
Yeah, let's do it.
As a leader, I can't tell you the number of times when I've had this emotion, but I've held it back, which is, boy, this job would be great if it wasn't for all these people. That's so unfair. It's so not true. But,
right.
But how do you, it's hard to resist that feeling. And frankly, you're wrong. Because if you're a leader sitting in a vacuum, thinking everybody else just doesn't get it, I think you're the one that doesn't get it. So what do we actually do to help leaders with their dialogue, with their communication to their teams?
So the first thing is naming that elephant that you just named that's always in the room. Almost every single time there is an elephant, a thought that goes unspoken that you're holding and saying, oh my goodness, just if this one thing changed, we won't need to have this conversation. And because you have that in mind already, it's helpful to just say, I'm coming into this conversation with this on my mind, as well as what is stated on the agenda. Or if you're in a situation that it's unhelpful to name that thing, that elephant, to the entire room as a leader, name it for yourself. Because part of the thing is the unconscious mind drives action. And so if you are able to say that below the surface, this is driving my action, how might I then behave? So with a team, let's see. Tell me a case example with the team that you'd like me to apply this to.
All right. Let's say, let's stay in the field of talent development. And let's say I want, you know, I've just come out of the meeting with the big bosses, you know, our stakeholders. And they're going to take the organization in a new direction and have a new initiative. And they don't really know what they want. They know the outcome, but they don't know what we're going to do to get it. And I come back to my team and I've got the outcome. You know, I've captured that. And let's say it's something direct. They want to improve out of the factory floor. They want to improve safety incidents. They want to have safety incidents down. They come to me and they go, how can you go to our team and get them to be more safe and knock those safety incidents down by 10% within the next 6 months? Now, I've got a goal. That's all I have. You know, now, as a talent developer, I might have things running through my head about what kind of safety training, what kind of awareness, whatever. But I really don't know yet. Now I'm going to come back to my team and say, this is the outcome. How are we going to get there? And I may not know. In fact, I probably don't, because I don't know about you, but whenever I've been a leader, I've almost never the smartest person in the world.
Right. Just the guy. So perhaps you start with reflecting yourself before you go straight to the team. You pause for a minute and you notice what is top of mind for you. What unconscious thoughts or conscious thoughts are present? What are the risk factors or the biases that are there for you? And just jot those down and then enter the conversation with your team by saying, this is the direction we're moving towards. I have no clear pathway that we'll take just yet. And let's discuss what's possible here with regards to shifting the safety. So what that often looks like is the team saying, well, we could do this training or that training, et cetera. But part of that is understanding from the individuals that need that safety shift, what behaviors are they doing when they incur more unsafe conditions?
Now, I'm bringing two other concerns into the fray in this scenario. I have hidden commitments. Commitments that I may not share with my boss, commitments that I might not have even shared with my team. And the two that I can think of immediately are, can we accomplish this? And what else are we going to give up? Because, you know, it's not like we were sitting on a bunch of money and resources and stuff like that. We were busy doing things. What are we going to shift around in terms of priorities? And as a leader, I've been trying to protect them from that. I've been trying to keep their situation calm. I'll go in the storm. But I want them to be calm. Now I'm bringing the storm to them.
And as the leader, you set the weather. So if you are bringing the storm to your team, you're setting the tone for your team to be navigating a storm. So I would then think about how do we take a step back and notice, okay, the storm is getting closer to my team. What are the commitments, the trade-offs that I as a leader am willing to make that will enable us to move forward in the way that I know we need to move forward in? And how then, given the structure of my team and how I know my team, do I approach communicating that in a way that's dialogic, that we are hearing from everyone and then coming into insight to move forward? So the difference in a traditional conversation is that the leader will walk in the room. I've thought about this. Here are the thoughts that I have. Does anyone have anything they want to add?
Everybody ducks and covers.
Everyone ducks. I'm not adding anything to that. It sounds like you've gotten it, figured it out. So tell us.
And the real conversations happen in the hallway or down the road. They happen outside of you. So let me ask you this. I'm a professional certified coach. And so one of the things coaches do, we're trained to ask questions. And what I've learned as a leader is in this scenario that we're talking about right here, instead of coming in and telling people what we're going to do, if I ask the question, what impact does that have on everybody? How does that change the dynamic when I ask the question about, this is what we've been tasked with, what do you think we should do? As opposed to coming in with saying, we've been tasked with such and such, this is what we're going to do. How are they different?
You've just changed the weather. You've gone from a storm to a calm. You've asked what changes may happen so that people can then have the capacity to recognize that so that we can come into choice. Coming into choice as a leader, as a manager, as a independent contributor on a team is critical for trust because that's the agency of the individual and critical to the outcome that you're after. And so oftentimes that is the friction, and the tension is to get to that means a slowing down, a different way of processing of the information so that you can then use that information to move forward.
Now I'm worried. If I come in and ask questions and I hand it to the team, aren't I losing power? Aren't I letting the inmates run the asylum, if you will? How do I get past that emotion?
Tell me more. Well, why do you feel that your power is draining?
You just did it to me. Because, you know, I'm a leader. Well, I'm a success. I put the stake in the sand and I go toward it, man. I produce results. Look at last year. Look at the year before. You know, those are the things that are running through my heart and my mind about, you know, metaphorically about, you know, hey, I didn't get here because I'm chopped liver, man. You know, my name's on the door, you know? And so I guess what I'm saying is that a lot of times that same drive, I wonder if it inhibits the ability of the leader to have that conversation with his or her team.
Absolutely. So oftentimes our greatest strength is also our greatest weakness. And so asking questions and how we frame questions is a critical skill, and it's a vulnerability because it's a letting of the guard down of, I don't know everything, which none of us does, frankly, right? The truth is none of us knows everything, and admitting that and creating an environment that allows thinking and questions is a shift from the way that leaders have traditionally worked in the workplace.
You know, people, leaders often go in and look for support. Like, will you go along with this? It's involvement. They look for involvement. They look for
buy-in.
I can't stand the word buy-in. Buy-in means that you are going to give up something and put it in my pocket to let me run with it. Buy-in is like, I don't want your buy-in. I want your commitment. You know, and the difference between involvement and commitment, it's like the different, it's like a ham and eggs breakfast. The chicken was involved, but the pig was committed. And so how do we go from involving people in our decision to actually building commitment toward the outcome?
We have to understand why people are there to begin with. So oftentimes we're making assumptions with regards to why someone is a part of a team, a part of a project, without actually understanding why they're committed to it. And that's a core tenet in how we then scaffold that commitment. When a different idea comes, that individual can run it through their processing of their level of commitment to then align and then move forward. But without understanding your own commitment, then the agency is given over. So what you're actually talking about, Rich, is self-leadership, which is a core tenet that we talk about in training and talent development, that each individual needs self-leadership to be able to execute on a decision, to be able to articulate a thought. However, part of the challenge is recognizing what questions and how do I want to frame a question to elicit a generative response and a generative relationship, because this is a relationship. So getting buy-in is, we're not in a relationship together. I just need you to do this thing for me. And maybe it's transactional.
Yeah.
Leadership is exactly. Here's my money. Do this one thing. Don't think about it. Don't elicit any of your faculties. And what we're talking about is a shift of that and asking people to be, if you were fully present with this and we were fully present in this relationship with each other, how might we choose to interact? How might we collaborate to get to the goal? What unconventional or creative ways might we come into if we start to approach it slightly different?
Before we dive back in, here's a quick message about some of the partners and resources helping us strengthen the Human Capital Lab through sharing ideas, building connections, and expanding impact.
Did you know that the Human Capital Lab facilitates an interactive, engaging community of practice? We meet monthly to exchange ideas, workshop real challenges, and explore what's next in talent development. It's free to join, and you will collaborate with peers in companies and organizations from across the nation and even over the pond. Check it out and join today at humancapitallab.org.
You hit on the word trust, and I want to come back to that for a minute. In the consulting world, there's a very famous model. It's called the trust equation. And it simply says this, that we build trust with our clients, our stakeholders, frankly, our employees, or anybody that we're working with, through three factors. To be reliable, you know, so people can count on you. To be credible, you know, what you say and what you do is legit, it's going to work, it's real, you're who you are, and so forth. And the third is intimacy. In other words, we understand each other. This is something you said a little bit earlier about knowing what motivates your people, knowing where is their stake. Why are they there? What's their with them there? What's in it for me? You know, why are they driven by this? Not just to fall back on, well, I pay them. Why don't they just do it? Well, okay. You've just called for the minimum.
That's exactly.
But all of that trust building is undermined the more you put yourself into it, the more you look out for yourself and your self-interest. So tell me what your opinion about how, in this dialogue and building this trust and having this conversation, how can the leader's sense of self and focus on his or her own needs and so forth interfere with building that trust and that dialogue with their people?
So it depends on your pacing. So if you're thinking you need something done within the next hour, your sense of self is going to pass that urgency on before you even make the request or ask the question for a response from your person. And so as a leader, understanding what are the things that lead you to avoidance or over engagement, because that is usually where you oscillate and you want to be temperate in the middle, but we know we're human, so we oscillate. And so where are you on that continuum? Being able to do a self-check. And then coming back to the subject at hand and saying, okay, I would like at the end of this conversation that we're here. Can I say that to the individual as an intention for the conversation? A lot of the things that we're talking about are held as unspokens in a conversation. And that is what becomes the burden, because the other individual can sense that there's something else, and that something else is unsaid. And that then affects the dynamic, because that person is like, something's a little off here, but I don't know what it is. I can't figure it out. So I'm going to pull back too. And that's often the most tension that occurs between a leader and their team, is when they hold back, they believe their team won't notice.
How do we move these tacit feeling to make them explicit so that we have it on the table, if you will?
Radical honesty and curiosity of your team. So, hey, Rich, we're talking right now and I'm noticing that I am having competing thoughts of the pacing that we're talking at and the other items on my to-do list that I have to accomplish. Just want to say that if you realize that I speed up, you can tell me to slow down.
You know, the Japanese have a saying, the slower I go, the faster I go. And I've worked with leaders for the last 40 years. And one of the biggest flaws I see is their inability to prioritize what needs to be done immediately and what could be worked on at a more normal and thorough pace. And when everything's a priority, your staff learns pretty soon, nothing's a priority. You come in with your hair lit up and on fire. Oh, the latest. And I'm like, yeah. We've seen this fire drill over and over again. So how can I, as a leader, through dialogue, get to know what people are driven by? What are their motivations? How do I dig into that using dialogue?
So you can start by having a conversation around the contexts that are in the company. So we're never just holding one thing. So if you are looking to get to know your team members better, one way is by having a conversation about everyone's journey into the company and how they're in the role that they're in. So what were their desires when they came into the role and how is that aligning? We typically leave that until an annual evaluation or a performance review or a performance plan and not see it as an intentional weaving throughout all conversations of how do I hold in mind where this individual is and what is their driver. We all have a driver. We all have a thing that is our impetus to action. And so a way to do that with your team is by asking them about the things that get them started. Meaning, what are the things that you're doing in your day-to-day work that allows you to see more connection to the overall picture of where we're going? And how does that support you? 9 out of 10 leaders say they slow their productivity when they don't see the impact they're having.
It gets back to the point you made about the weather. And I love that analogy. I use it in my leadership development all the time. The leader can make it rain. The leader can bring out the sun. It's incredible the amount of power you have. You may not feel that way sometimes. Maybe you feel like you're the warden of an insane asylum, but you're not. You're just providing direction and support of usually a bucket of people that are really wonderful. And as you said, have come from it from so many different directions, but they're there for a reason. If you're familiar with the term WIFM, what's in it for me? I was having a conversation with a colleague about 15 years ago, maybe 20 years ago. And full disclosure, I'm a retired Air Force officer. So he was talking with me one day and he does a lot of work with the military. And he said, Rich, what's every lieutenant colonel's WIFM? And I said, well, what? He goes, to become a colonel. And you know what? He was wrong. It's not everyone's. It's a lot. But I don't think we can assume these things. I don't think we can assume that everybody on our team wants to get promoted, wants to move into our job, or everybody on our team wants the same thing. I think what you're asking us to do is to ask and to be vulnerable to the open up the possibility. And then now, but here's the challenge. Now that I've asked a question, I got to do something with the answer.
Now what?
Yeah. So what?
And asking the question, let's dig deeper into that. Oftentimes, we're afraid of asking a question that we don't have an answer to. And the question is enough. The question alone is a sufficient container, intention for contemplation, for reflection. And so someone answering what's in it for them doesn't mean now it's your responsibility to make what they desire to happen. It means that now both of you are holding that information and keeping it in mind. And so when you're keeping something in mind, it means if an opportunity aligns, you now have that insight to pair those things together. And one of the critical skills of a leader is pattern matching and being able to see how things come together that you may not, on a first glance, it might not look like they're good to come together, but seeing how they will complement each other to then move forward. And that is the attention to detail and the pacing that we were just talking about that enables that. Another way to think about it as well is oftentimes, like we talked about the weather, another way of engaging the team is what emotions support the outcome that you're after. Because we know we are always having emotions. We always have multiple at the same time. But really having a moment to say, what emotions support this outcome? What emotions block it? And from there, you can develop a habit of noticing that helps to reinforce the helpful emotions and reduce the blockers. And that allows people to notice how they're feeling day to day, how that is weaving in, and also noticing that it's their agency and their choice around their feelings, how they're making meaning versus putting it on someone else.
The number of times that I have been asked by a supervisor, what am I trying to do? What goal am I trying to achieve? Why am I here? Or so few. And more often, I've had supervisors, whether it's in the military, public sector, private sector, who tell me what I want next. You know, I went to work for the federal government and I was a consultant, and they said, hey, come in, you know, help us be here, you know, own this instead of just tell us what to do. And I said, yes. And it ended up being a 13-year gig. But when I first landed, my boss's first question was, I came in as a high muckety muck. And the very first question he had was, well, how long are you going to take to promote? And it's like, dude, I just showed up here. Where's my desk? Where's my phone? You're already asking me about a promotion that, frankly, and the irony was, I knew what he was talking about and I didn't want it. I lasted 18 months. I did what I came to do. And I was like, I got to go, because I don't know, for one reason or another, he was projecting, because it was his experience. He came in like I did, landed at a high level, and it took him about a year and a half to jump up. And he just wanted me to, he thought that was really supportive, you know, and he meant well. But, you know, again, not asking a question, but rather just taking his experiences.
And made an assumption.
Yeah. And said, hey, you know, obviously you're here to do the same thing, right? And not waiting for the answer, which was not right. I don't want your job. I don't want to move up. I just want to do what I came to do. It was the first time in my life where I didn't have a promotional motivation, and it felt great. And all of a sudden, he was taking it away. So anyway, I'm sorry. I don't mean to ramble, but I think being transparent, being open, there's a sense of vulnerability. But what I would want to encourage leaders is, don't forget, you can be as vulnerable as you want. You're in charge. You can actually use your power by not using your power, but rather by empowering others. And the beauty of it is that, Nicola, if, hypothetically, if you worked for me and I empowered you like mad, I've lost no power.
You've gained power because now the power is distributed and more people want to work with you because they're like, you know what? Rich is the type of leader that is going to allow you to take ownership of what project you're working on, of your domain. Rich trusts his people. That's how those statements get started in cultures, is by the distribution, and how you choose to lead allows people to then come into their own leadership. And subsequently, you're creating a ripple effect.
If you load up a team full of leaders, it's amazing where they'll take you if you're willing to let them rip. And that doesn't, again, it doesn't disempower you as the leader. As you said, you caught me on this. Not only does it, do you get to keep your power, but you actually get more through them and through their. And it all comes down to having that conversation and being open to people and being willing to ask, because sometimes they're going to challenge you with something. Yeah, oh my goodness, now I own this. Okay, you know, that's part of the bargain. They work for you, then you should be supporting and working for them as well. That's the trade-off. Before we wrap up, I just want to turn the tables, like I like to do with our guests, and say, is there any particular message or any particular thing that you want to make sure gets out there?
The particular thing that I would like leaders to think about as they're continuing to move and navigate is that a conversation and intentional dialogue is the best thing for every relationship. And you always need to move at the pace of the relationship. So as you're thinking about the team that you're working with, remember to connect with them. Remember to identify the patterns, refine, and then elevate. Because as you elevate your team, so will you elevate.
I said I was going to hand it off. And then, of course, you said something really smart, and I have to stay with it for a minute. And that is, how, what do you do? You, Nicola, what do you do with your clients to help them build this ability to have these dialogues? What methods do you use?
We use a lot of questions. So at Kokoro, we use questions as our tool, and questions are our conduit. And we use what questions, what if, not why per se, what becomes possible when, insert here. So what becomes possible when you think about your leadership as a tool that supports the vision that you're after?
Now, do you do this through like one-on-one coaching? Do you work with your clients that way? Or
we work with groups intentionally. So Rich, you're a leadership coach and that's executive coach. We have chosen as a company to design all of our offerings as group-based supports for leaders within companies. And the reason for that is that we know that individual work is critical, and the friction comes in the application of what you have talked about in your coaching session or your therapy session. How do you then apply it in the workplace? And so we come alongside with labs that support individuals to take their real case study, not a hypothetical, and work through it together to get to a vision.
So this takes us full circle. This is what we talked about at the beginning, which was getting leaders out of their heads and getting engaged with the team. So it sounds to me like you actually put people through practical exercises in order to make that happen. We want everybody to know that if they're interested in engaging you or learning more about your team, they can reach you at your website, which is joinkokoro. That's joinkokoro.com. Joinkokoro.com, where we can learn more about your practice, what you do, how you do it, and possibly even engage you. Any last words for our audience before we head out?
Always ask the question.
That needs to go on a t-shirt, in a signature line, on a letterhead. It needs to go everywhere. I agree with you 100%. That's just awesome, Nicola. I really appreciate it. Folks, this has been Nicola Brown, and please check her out at joinkokoro.com. And what a wonderful conversation, Nicola. I just have had a fun time. And by the way, speaking of trust, I think that you and I, who barely met to the point where I didn't even quite remember that we'd met it online in another forum, that now if we ran into each other, we trust each other a lot more just from this 40 minutes of dialogue or so that we've had together. So I really encourage people, open up, engage. You'd be surprised where people around you will take you if you're willing to go. So again, thank you. You can reach Nicola Brown at joinkokoro.com. And Nicola, I just want to thank you for joining us today and being such a wonderful guest.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us on the Human Capital Lab podcast, a Growth Network podcast production in collaboration with Bellevue University. For more info, visit humancapitallab.org. If you were inspired today, pass the link on to a colleague or friend. Stay tuned for our next episode, and until then, keep learning to unlock the long-term potential of human capital.